You are Locked On Orioles, your daily Baltimore Orioles podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hey there, Orioles fans. Today is Wednesday, September 22nd, 2021, and welcome back in to the Locked On Orioles podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. As always, I'm your host, Connor Newcomb, and coming up on today's episode, we recap kind of a heartbreaking loss for the Orioles as they fall 3-2 in 10 innings against the Philadelphia Phillies in game two of a three-game set in Philly on Tuesday night. O's got one in the top of the 10th, but the Phillies got two in the bottom of the 10th to walk it off against the Orioles. We will recap the game, give you the five things you need to know from that one. Then I'm going to take a look at the Ryan Mountcastle for AL Rookie of the Year situation at the moment, because he is one of the top three contenders for the award at the time being. But I'm going to give my position on why, you know, Ryan Mountcastle, he's probably not going to win the award when you look at the numbers and you look at the narratives. And I'm going to tell you why he's not going to win it, but why that is okay. Then coming up at the end of the podcast, going to update you on some Orioles roster moves as they claimed another pitcher off the waiver wire on Tuesday. And also, a player ends his season due to an injury. One of the Orioles outfielders is done for the year. And then I'll get you ready for the third and final game of the series against the Phillies coming up later tonight. But that is all coming up on this episode of the Locked On Orioles podcast, which is brought to you by Spotify Green Room. Download the app and join me every week to talk Orioles and get in on the action at Spotify Green Room, changing the way we talk sports. So today we start with a tough Orioles loss in Philly on Tuesday night. And after winning the opener on Monday 2-0, the Orioles were kind of locked in a similar game on Tuesday, but they fall 3-2 in 10 innings, dropping the O's to 48-103 on the season. I'm going to get you the five things you need to know from that one. Starting with the first thing you need to know from the Orioles 3-2 loss is that it was a bullpen game for the Orioles, but to be quite honest with you, the bullpen was pretty good. 9 2/3 innings of work in this one. They allow 3 runs on 9 hits to the Phillies. The Phillies' hard hit percentage was under 20%. Their expected batting average as a team was just 185 on the day. The Orioles' bullpen was good in this one. Connor Green got the start, worked around a couple of base runners with 2 strikeouts to get out of the first inning. Marcos Duplan gave the Orioles 2 scoreless innings. You had Thomas Eshelman allow just 1 run over 2 2/3. He struck out 3, including Bryce Harper, blew an 85-mile-per-hour fastball by Harper. Then you had Dylan Tate, Fernando Abad, Eric Hanhold, Tyler Wells, all with scoreless outings for the Orioles after that, and really kept them in this ball game. And just got to really hand it to the Orioles bullpen as a staff overall in this one. The O's, again, 9 2/3 innings. They allowed just the 3 runs, and only 2 of them were earned, of course, because one of those runs unearned because of the zombie runner on second base in the 10th inning. Again, just allowed the 9 hits on the day. The strikeouts were pretty good. They struck out 10 batters in that time, and they combined for just 2 walks on the day. One of those was an intentional walk, so only 1 true walk on the day. A great job by Orioles pitching. Second thing you need to know from the loss is that because the Orioles had to go with a bullpen day and they ended up using a total of 8 pitchers in the game, it left them with Cesar Valdez to try and close out the game in the bottom of the 10th inning, as the Orioles had used all of their best relievers. They'd used 7 pitchers already, and Valdez was by far the best option to go to when the Orioles took the lead in the top of the 10th on the Austin Hayes RBI double, went up 2-1. You go to the bottom of the 10th, the best option by far was Cesar Valdez, who, hey, despite his struggles, still the Orioles leader for saves this season with those 8 saves he had early in the year. That is still the clubhouse leader for the Orioles. He came back out there and, you know, again, it was a real struggle for him down the stretch with the O's before he went back to AAA, but he had an ERA under 1.5 in his, you know, 10 appearances or thereabouts in AAA. And the stuff looked a lot better from Valdez in the 10th inning than it had previously, but just didn't quite work out for him. First batter, Odubel Herrera, hit a screamer to shortstop. Richie Martin made a nice play on a ground out, one away, runner went to third. Then great job by Valdez. I mean, textbook dead fish, 3 pitches, strikes out Gene Segura with the tying run at third and 1 out, got him to chase, couple of dead fish changeups way out of the zone. And then, as they should have done, they intentionally walked Bryce Harper, who's probably going to be the NL MVP. Now, again, you do put the winning run on first base, but I have a feeling Harper may have hit a two-run homer in that spot, so you put him on first. Now, the only thing that was questionable was JT Realmuto was up next. He's a great hitter as well. Orioles decided to pitch to Realmuto. Now, if you would have put Realmuto on, it would have been two outs with the pitcher spot up, and the only batter that the Phillies had left on the bench was their backup catcher, Andrew Knapp, who is a left-handed hitter, but he is one of the worst hitters in baseball. He's hitting around 150 this year. WRC plus is around 30 on the year. He's just been terrible, basically as a defensive catcher with no bat. And obviously it would have been a risk, because if you put Realmuto on, just a single from Knapp would have probably won the game with Bryce Harper running from second and two down. So they went after Realmuto. Valdez left a 2-1 changeup up. Realmuto hit it to right field. Santander was so close to making that catch in right, just couldn't get to it. Ball hits off the wall, and a hustling Bryce Harper just beats the relay throw into the plate for the walk-off two-run double for Realmuto. But, you know, I still think Valdez pitched well. His stuff looked a lot better than it did right before the Orioles DFA'd him earlier in the year. And they were just, you know, they had to do it. They had already used, you know, Dylan Tate and Duplan and Green, and Tyler Wells had pitched a 1-2-3 ninth to send it to extra innings. And they were really just pretty much left with Valdez, the only guy who's had any kind of thing close to high leverage experience that was left in the bullpen. He's your saves leader. You go to him again. Almost worked out. Just wasn't meant to be for the Orioles on Tuesday night. Third thing you need to know from this one is that Cedric Mullins had a pretty good day at the plate. He was 2-for-5. He had a double. He did not strike out, but he was so close to the 30th home run, which would have given him the first 30-30 season in Orioles history. Now, he had a leadoff double in this game. He singled later in the game as well, but earlier in the game, he hit a ball on an 0-2 pitch down the line in right field, just missing the foul pole down the right field line. They called it a foul ball, said it just missed the pole. They reviewed it for a while. Got bad flashbacks of Nate McLouth in Game 5 of the 2012 ALDS with that one. It looked so close, but they said the call on the field stood for a foul ball. Would have been a solo home run, and it would have been Cedric Mullins' 30 of the year. He didn't get it, but still had a 2-for-5, but we still wait for that 30th homer to give him the first 30-30 season in Orioles history. Fourth thing you need to know from this one is we got pretty much full-scale National League baseball in this one. And a lot of it had to do with the fact that the Orioles were doing a bullpen game, so you're even more likely to use pinch hitters whenever the pitcher spot comes up in the game. I mean, Connor Green was the starter in this game, and he didn't even get a chance to hit. He pitched an inning. He was pinch hit for by Ryan McKenna. Then you had Marcos Duplan pitch two innings. Then he was pinch hit for by Ramon Arias, who ended up getting scratched from the lineup before the game, was on the bench, but was still good enough to pinch hit and did deliver an RBI single in the fourth inning that gave the Orioles a 1-0 lead at the time. And you kind of look at this game, and it was really interesting with all the pitchers that the Orioles used in this game. The only one that hit was Thomas Eshelman. That's because he was kind of the bulk guy, and he ended up grounding out with two on and two out in the top of the six with the Orioles leading 1-0 at the time. But every other time, you know, the Orioles used their entire bench. McKenna pinch hit, Arias pinch hit. They used Mountcastle as a pinch hitter, and then Austin Wins came in as a defensive replacement as well, used the entire four-man bench. They even used the starting pitcher Chris Ellis as a pinch runner for Arias after Arias had that base hit. Apparently, it was tough for him to run with whatever injury, you know, the lower body injury he's been dealing with, so Chris Ellis came in to pinch run as well. It was maximum National League Baseball. Just give us the DH. Just please, just give us the universal DH. Hopefully, that happens next season. And the fifth and final thing you need to know from this one is that the September of Austin Hayes continues. And it didn't end up being the winner for the Orioles, but Hayes had a 1-for-4 with a double and an RBI. That RBI double came in the top of the 10th inning after Cedric Mullins flew out to start the inning with the runner on second. Austin Hayes, on the first pitch against Phillies closer Ian Kennedy, delivers an RBI double down the left field line to give the O's a 2-1 lead in the 10th. Of course, they did not hold it, as we talked about, and lost this game, but he continues to hit the ball well. And again, it was his only hit of the game, also had a strikeout, but it was the key hit with the RBI. He just continues to swing it well, and it continues to be just great scenes for the Orioles. And to be honest, in this game, you know, the Orioles did lose. Obviously, the Phillies need this way more than the Orioles do. They're right in the middle of a playoff chase in the National League East and for the NL wild card, but pretty proud of how the Orioles responded in this game. They have to use eight pitchers. Really, you kind of look at the eight pitchers they used. I would say right now, Only two of the eight pitchers the Orioles used are probably locks for the 2022 roster. That's Dylan Tate and Tyler Wells. The other six pitchers, who knows where they'll be next year. So it shows you that those guys went 9 2/3, allowing just two earned runs. It was a pretty good bullpen day for the Orioles. They just couldn't pull it out. They were, you know, one out away. It's pretty impressive by what this Orioles roster has together at this point. But either way, the Orioles did not win the game. And it did probably hurt that, you know, they can't really use all their good hitters in the National League because they don't have the DH. So it was Cedric Mullins who sat out on Monday night. It was Ryan Mountcastle who sat out on Tuesday night. Now, he did pinch hit late in the game and did end up with an 0-for-1. But for Mountcastle, you know, it's been a fantastic season for him. And the Orioles lineup did kind of miss him on Tuesday night. And we're getting all this talk now, you know, will Ryan Mountcastle be the American League Rookie of the Year? And to a lot of Orioles fans, it feels like the way he's been hitting, he really should be. But coming up after the break, I'm going to take a look into the numbers, not just Mountcastle's numbers, but the numbers of the other, I'd say, four main contenders for the award as well, especially the two guys who I think might be ahead of Mountcastle at this point. I'll tell you why Ryan Mountcastle, just going to let you know, probably isn't going to win this award for multiple reasons, but I'll also tell you why that is just fine for the Orioles because Mountcastle still looks like a fantastic piece for the future. That's all coming up after the break. So we'll get to our Ryan Mountcastle discussion in just a second, but first, this episode is brought to you by Spotify Green Room. Spotify Green Room is the first social audio platform made for sports fans. The app is free to download, and once you're in, you can talk with me, other fans, athletes, and insiders in real time about your favorite team or sport. I'll be hosting rooms for Locked On Orioles every week. Yes, you can finally join in on the conversation you listen to here every day. Spotify Green Room is the perfect place to start or join conversations about the league. You'll find fans just like you on Spotify Green Room for watch parties, debates, post-game breakdowns, and of course, reacting to the big news or rumors. So go download the free Spotify Green Room app now, currently available on all iOS devices. Be sure to create a profile, link your Twitter, and join the MLB group for the latest league updates. And follow me at Connor Newcomb to be notified when my room goes live. I know you won't want to miss it. I'm planning to be live every single week, and I can't wait to hear everyone's thoughts on the Orioles. See you there at Spotify Green Room, changing the way we talk sports. And today's episode of the Locked On Orioles podcast is also brought to you by BetOnline.ag, which is back and better than ever, as all eyes are on the gridiron. Teams are back to start another football season. And as always, BetOnline is your number one spot for all the pro and college football action this year. With a new updated site and interface, even more odds, props, and contests, BetOnline.ag continues to be the number one source for everything football. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today, and you can receive a 100% welcome bonus as well. That's double your initial deposit just for signing up. And don't forget to use the promo code NFL100, and make sure you plug in that promo code LOCKEDON as well so they know that we sent you. From football, basketball, boxing, right to your favorite Vegas casino games, don't wait to take advantage of all the amazing offers available for the 2021 season. At BetOnline.ag, your online sportsbook experts. So we have all truly watched Ryan Mountcastle just mash the baseball this season in what is his first full season in the big leagues, of course his second season in the bigs, as we saw him get some good experience and some good numbers in the 2020 shortened season, but was still rookie eligible here in 2021. And coming into the season, I made one bold prediction at the beginning of the year, as did all 30 hosts of the Locked On MLB podcasts here on the network. And my big bold prediction was that Ryan Mountcastle will win American League Rookie of the Year here in 2021. And let me tell you, that prediction did not look good early in the season. You remember Mountcastle's month of April? It was not good. He hit just 198. He had just a 515 OPS, had just one home run in 96 plate appearances in April. Things were not looking good for Ryan Mountcastle. And honestly, the struggles continued a little bit into May. He had kind of a really inconsistent May, but in general, in the month of May, he started to turn things around just a bit. And by the end of May, it was a 256 month, 748 OPS. He had four home runs in 92 plate appearances that month, ended up with 22 hits, multitude of multi-hit games, as well for Mountcastle. And, you know, he really started to turn things around. And honestly, he really started to turn things around late in April. He finished April on a 5-game hitting streak and, you know, started to move upward. The lowest the batting average got in terms of, you know, a somewhat regular looking sample size, he was down at 169 after an 0-for-3 against the Marlins back on April 21st. Things were not looking up. He actually got an off day the next day. Brandon Hyde kept him out of the lineup, and then he started to trend the other way for the Orioles. But, you know, May was good, and then June, he just kind of lit the world on fire. Hit .327, had an OPS over 1,000, had 9 home runs in June, and he was off. And, you know, even after a July where he really started to slump again, it didn't really faze him. He was, you know, .205 average in July, .656 OPS, just 3 home runs. August, he had the best month we've seen from him and really put himself right into this Rookie of the Year conversation. August, he hit .357. He had almost a 1,200 OPS. He had 8 home runs that month and just 78 plate appearances in the month. So far here in September, hasn't been as good. It's been a .214 average, but he's gotten on base a little bit more. Still a .747 OPS. Still does have 5 homers. And he's still hitting the ball well. And, you know, he did have an 0-for-2 or an 0-for-4, I should say, back on Monday against the Phillies. But his last two games against the Red Sox, he had back-to-back two-hit games over the weekend. He continues to swing the bat pretty well. And so the question becomes, as you look at Ryan Mountcastle's stats, these are updated through play on Monday, so it does not include Tuesday night's game in Philly. But you look at Ryan Mountcastle's stats and you ask, you know, can he be the American League Rookie of the Year here in 2021? Can he fulfill my bold prediction from the beginning of the season? He's a .261 hitter in 539 plate appearances so far this season, .314 on base, and .808 OPS. He's got 30 home runs. He's driven in 83 runs on the season. In terms of stats, looking a little deeper, yes, the 27% strikeout rate isn't great. The 7.1% walk rate, you would like to be up a little bit more. And it's a 114 WRC plus, which is, of course, a stat that kind of takes into account, you know, the pitchers you're facing, the ballparks you're hitting in. It's in terms of your league average. All these different things come into account with WRC plus. And essentially, in the end, 100 is league average. He is up at 114 for the season. He's hitting the ball with power, and you know, he's got 4 stolen bases as well. But you know, the question is, where does Mountcastle fit in? And what I'm going to go through here on today's episode is just kind of quickly that, you know, at the end of the day, I don't think Ryan Mountcastle is going to win AL Rookie of the Year. And I know, you know, after that incredible August, a lot of people are pushing for that to be the case. But again, he hasn't followed up with such a good September. But either way, it's okay if he does not win American League Rookie of the Year. And I don't think he will at this point unless he really turns it on over the final 2 weeks. And again, that's going to be okay for Ryan Mountcastle, because even though he doesn't get an award, he showed that, you know, 30-some games in 2020 was not a fluke. And instead that, you know, after a really, really tough first month of this season, he can turn things around and be a fantastic hitter at the plate for the Orioles. And so, you know, there really are a good number of kind of main competitors with Ryan Mountcastle for this award. I would say, you know, the top two guys ahead of him are Adolis Garcia, the outfielder for the Rangers, and Randy Arozarena, the outfielder for the Rays, who was also, of course, the star of the 2020 postseason. Now, BetOnline.ag, of course, a sponsor here at Locked On Orioles, just put out its AL Rookie of the Year updated odds. They have Ryan Mountcastle third on that list. They've got Randy Arozarena with the best odds, followed by Adolis Garcia, then Ryan Mountcastle. Arozarena has 1-2 odds, Garcia 11-4, Ryan Mountcastle 11-2 odds, and then it's Wander Franco fourth at 10-1, and then the starting pitcher for the Astros, Luis Garcia, is fifth at 12-1. But to be honest with you, not a lot of the rookie pitchers this year have been that good, and I kind of take Garcia out of the running for this award and probably put Akil Baddoo in that list instead. So really you're looking at 5 guys: Arozarena, Garcia, Mountcastle, Franco, and Akil Baddoo, the outfielder for the Tigers, who was one of the best Rule 5 picks in memory as he came over to Detroit this season. And, you know, there's multiple ways to look at this when comparing them. First, let's just go by kind of the stat that tries to encompass everything you do on the field, and that is WAR, wins above replacement. in terms of the Fangraphs leaderboard. And there is actually a really interesting trend in terms of the WAR. Number one among qualified American League rookies is Adolis Garcia from the Rangers. 2.8 WAR. That means he's been worth just about 3 wins for the Rangers this season. And now, if you remember, Garcia was the talk of the town the first couple of months of the year. He, at the moment, has 30 home runs, same as Ryan Mountcastle. Those two are tied for the lead among American League rookies. But Garcia hit about 20 of those, it seemed like, in the first 2.5 months of the year. I mean, he had, I believe, 21 home runs at the All-Star break, and he's hit just 9 since then. He was hitting home runs left and right early in the year for Texas. Now, the offense for him has kind of slowed down, and his WRC plus is actually down at 103. He actually, now with his kind of struggles in the second half, has basically fallen to a just above average major league hitter despite the 30 homers, because he hasn't done much else than that. His walk rate at 5.4% is worse than Mountcastle's, and his strikeout rate at 31.3% is also worse than Mountcastle. You know, people talk about how Mountcastle strikes out too much and walks too little. Garcia is even worse on both ends. But what puts Garcia at the top, he is the best defensive player by far among all of these Rookie of the Year candidates. Now, there's a lot of different metrics you can kind of look at when evaluating defense, but Fangraphs has a metric that is just defensive value, and it at least puts into perspective, you know, how defenders compare to others. It's not the best stat to look at, and not a lot of defensive stats are at this point in terms of sabermetric defense, but what it does do is at least try to combine a lot of the defensive numbers. And Adolis Garcia, his defensive value from Fangraphs is 8.3. That is the second best among all American League qualified rookies. You compare that to Ryan Mountcastle, he is negative 11.3. That is the second worst defensive value. The only guy who's been worse has been Bobby Dalbec in Boston. Of course, a lot of the negative value from Mountcastle did come when he was playing left field early in the season, and he has been better since he's basically switched to becoming either a first baseman or a DH whenever he's in the Orioles lineup. But the thing that does hurt him is when you're at first base, you can't really accrue a lot of defensive value as well, unless you are a really, really elite defensive first baseman. There's only about a handful of those guys in the major league. So that definitely does hurt Mountcastle as well. But hey, you know, he was an outfielder early in the year. It was bad to watch, and that definitely hurt his value. And that's what's really hurting his WAR at this point. So the Garcia thing is basically, you know, how much do you take into account his early season success? Everybody knew him in the first half of the season. He was an all-star. Compared to the late season struggles, and then how do you take into account the really great defense, which is keeping him atop the WAR leaderboards? But when you really look at it, you would think, oh, it's his offense keeping above the WAR leaderboards. It's really his defense at this point, as again, with the 103 WRC+, he has fallen to about a just above league average hitter over the entirety of the season. So the next guy I want to look at is Randy Arozarena. And of course, you know, voters are going to be swayed a bit by Arozarena having a historic postseason in 2020 with the Rays. You know, he came up for the very end of the 2020 regular season, got himself onto the postseason roster, and then basically hit a million home runs to help lead the Rays to the World Series last year, and came in, obviously, because of that, as the favorite for Rookie of the Year because he was still rookie eligible. And for Arozarena, again, it's been about 562 plate appearances on the year. He's hit 269. He has a 124 WRC+. Which is a pretty good number for him. That is second among all qualified rookies at this point. The thing for Arozarena, once again, is it's his offense that is putting him second in WAR at 2.5 WAR among qualified American League rookies. For Arozarena, 19 homers, 65 RBIs, the walk rate, 8.5. The strikeout rate's still pretty high, but he's hitting the ball hard, driving in a lot of runs, getting himself on base, the 347 on base percentage, a pretty good number as well. Much better than Mountcastle's 314, way better than Garcia's 288 on base. But the thing with Arozarena, he also bad defensively, negative 11.5 in that defensive value. He's not a good defensive outfielder out there most of the time. And so for him, that kind of takes away from his WAR. And I got to say, it kind of puts Arozarena as the front runner because it's 2.5 WAR. He's got the best offensive numbers. You know, he's played the most out of all these guys, seemingly. And, you know, I think if you're going to take really good defense versus really good offense, you're going to take a Rosarena who has sustained a great offensive season. He's got that fantastic postseason that shouldn't matter for this vote because it happened last year, but it's in the back of all the voters' minds. And yeah, the defense might be bad, which takes his WAR down some, but you kind of look at him as a player who is better than Garcia all around, it would seem like. And I think a Rosarena is the front runner. Now, the other two guys, Wander Franco, of course, the former top prospect in baseball who the Rays called up. Now, he's so far played 62 games. He's gotten 271 plate appearances. So he is technically qualified at this point to win the award. But even though he's been great, he has accrued 2.2 WAR in just 62 games. That's phenomenal. You know, he's accrued almost as much WAR as a Rosarena in less than half the games played. And he's been fantastic. You know, he's got seven homers. He's hitting .285. He's got a 127 WRC plus, which is best among all rookies. He has been sensational. He's been pretty solid defensively as well. But I don't know if the voters are going to give it to Franco in 62 games. And Franco is currently on the injured list. And, you know, the Rays are hoping he'll be back before the end of the regular season. So, you know, let's assume he gets, you know, by the time he gets back, maybe he pushes like 70 games that he plays in on the season. That's not going to be enough. If you're playing less than half the year, and at the end of the year, when voters are really starting to, you know, make up their minds about the award, he's not on the field. So despite his great stats, I don't think he's going to win it. And then, you know, the last guy to really throw in there is Akil Baddoo. He's been a great story for the Tigers, 13 homers, a 110 WRC+. He's been, you know, not great defensively in the outfield, but he's been good with a left-handed bat, .257 average, .324 on base, but just doesn't seem to have the numbers together that would get him in the conversation, but he's definitely there at a 1.7 WAR. Of course, Ryan Mountcastle with a 1.6 WAR. You know, they've had kind of similar seasons, Mountcastle and Baddoo, but the issue with Baddoo, again, he has struggled with injury, 113 games, 413 plate appearances versus Mountcastle's 132 games and 539 plate appearances through play on Monday night. So despite the WARs being basically the same there, the offensive stats looking somewhat similar, except for, of course, the power, which goes to Mountcastle. I'm going to give the edge to Mountcastle there. So I really do think, at the end of the day, Ryan Mountcastle will finish third in this conversation. I think Rosarena is going to get the award. I think Garcia finishes second. I think Mountcastle finishes third. And honestly, I think Franco finishes fourth. And if he had a full season of this, he is your winner. But, you know, it's going to be less than 70 games, it looks like, and they're probably not going to award him that when the other three top contenders are going to end up playing, you know, close all to 150 games in the season. You just can't give Franco the award at that point, even though he's been fantastic in the 62 games so far. And, you know, it's interesting to look at Mountcastle because you compare him to Garcia and Rosarena. And again, the WAR is worse because he gives you, you know, negative defensive value and at best no defensive value. He, you know, doesn't get on base like a Rosarena does, although he has more pop in the bat with the 30 home runs. And, you know, the strikeout rate is a bit of a problem, although it's basically equal to a Rosarena's. It's just Randy walks a lot more than Mountcastle does. And overall, these are two fantastic hitters from the right side of the plate. And also, let's just be honest about it. What's going to help Randy Rosarena and Wander Franco is that they're on first place teams, and the Orioles are a last place team. The Texas Rangers with Adolis Garcia, a last place team. The Detroit Tigers with Akil Baddoo, they are a, you know, third place team in the American League Central. So you're looking at these teams, and it helps you get that bump to, you know, be on a first place team. Team is going to win a division. Team is going to go to the playoffs. It helps that a Rosarena has that bump of being the star of the 2020 postseason. It shouldn't matter in the vote, but it's going to. And for all those reasons, you know, with the stats fairly equal, the WAR a little bit better, I think a Rosarena is going to get the award. And I think the, you know, kind of everything that came around Adolis Garcia in the first half of the season when he was fantastic, added in with that great defensive value that gives him the best WAR, I think puts him ahead of Mountcastle as well. But all of this is to say, you know, this doesn't mean get your head down, complain about the award, complain that Mountcastle was robbed, whatever it may be. Instead, you can look at it like the fact that Ryan Mountcastle had a fantastic season. Hopefully he finishes up a fantastic season over the last couple of weeks of the year here for the Orioles. He goes into next year, you know, with some AL Rookie of the Year first place votes, with some votes. He finishes second or third. He doesn't get the award. But he goes into 2022 knowing that the Orioles have a piece to not just do damage again in 2022, but be a future middle of the lineup piece for the next good Orioles team. And that's what they've got here with Ryan Mountcastle. So I don't think he's going to win the award. he's got an outside chance. Maybe he gets hot here. Maybe he hits some more homers. Maybe he has some key moments down the stretch, you know, against the Red Sox or the Blue Jays or the Phillies, even to, you know, take them out of the playoff race. And people remember that and you know, puts him more into the vote because, you know, some of these votes are obviously narrative-based as well, which is what gives the big plug to a Rosarena. But it's not going to matter that he doesn't win this award. I'm sure he wants it, but overall, we have shown that AL Rookie of the Year or not, Ryan Mountcastle is going to be a big-time player for the Orioles moving forward. Someone I think they should lock up, maybe not this offseason, but he does it again in 2022. Next offseason, I think you're looking at handing out some money to Ryan Mountcastle to keep him around for a long time because he is a gigantic piece of this Orioles team. And again, Garcia and Rosarena might have just, you know, a better script to win this award. That is okay because we still have our Orioles Rookie of the Year, which is Ryan Mountcastle, and he has been fantastic to watch. But we got a little more here on the pod before we go. Going to get you ready for tonight's Game 3, final game of the series between the Orioles and the Phillies, and then some Orioles roster moves that were made on Tuesday afternoon. We'll break them down a little further on tomorrow's episode, one at least to let you know about the newest pitcher that the Orioles have claimed off waivers. That's coming up after the break. So we'll get back to the Orioles talk in just a second, but first got to tell you about Built Bar and all of their delicious flavors of protein bars. They've got flavors like coconut, flavors like strawberry. They've got flavors like mint chocolate. How about double chocolate as well? Really something for everybody, whether you like, you know, a chocolatey Built Bar, a fruity Built Bar, or anything in between. But here's the thing about Built Bar, you know, they are delicious. Tastes like you're eating a candy bar, really. But the best part, they're healthy too. They're good for you. 17 to 18 grams of protein in every single bar, calories ranging from 130 to just 180, and only about 4 or 5 grams of sugar, and only about 4 or 5 grams of net carbs in every delicious bar. And Built Bar is also the official protein bar of the U.S. track and field team, and all those medals they brought home from Tokyo. So go to BuiltBar.com, use the promo code LOCKEDON, and you'll get 15% off your order. Again, that's promo code LOCKEDON for 15% off at BuiltBar.com. And today's episode of the Locked On Orioles podcast is also brought to you by DirecTV Stream. Does this sound familiar? You've got one device that lets you catch the game live, another that lets you stream your favorite shows, you're watching sports highlights on your phone, and you've got your neighbor's best friend's login for the good stuff. Well, I want to tell you about a simple way to get all that entertainment you love without the hassle, and a great way to finally get your TV together. It's called DirecTV Stream, and it brings your live TV and on-demand favorites together like never before, so you can watch your favorite sports, movies, and shows all in one place. That means no more juggling remotes, and no need to buy another device ever again. And the best part? There's no annual contract. So get rid of the clutter and the confusion, and get your TV together with DirecTV Stream. You can learn more at DirecTV.com. That's DirecTV.com. Compatible device required. Content varies by package. So before we go here today, more Orioles roster moves. Of course, on the Tuesday episode of the pod, we talked about Brooks Krischke, the right-handed pitcher who the Orioles claimed off waivers from the Yankees. He is now with the big league club. There's another one of those guys that has been claimed, and it is Joey Crable. He is a 28-year-old right-handed pitcher that the Orioles have claimed off waivers from the Rays. Crable, who was DFA'd by the Rays just a couple of days ago after he made his major league debut in terms of the 2021 season, his Rays debut on the 18th against the Tigers. He threw a scoreless inning out of relief, no hits, two strikeouts, and one walk in that inning for Joey Crable. And then remember, that's what the Rays did with Chris Ellis. He pitched in one game, then they DFA'd him and the Orioles scooped him up. They call up Crable. He pitches in one game, they DFA him, and once again, the Orioles pick him up. Now, Crable was a 12th round pick of the Los Angeles Angels all the way back in 2011 out of Seminole High School in Florida. And he bounced around for a while in the minor leagues before he finally made his major league debut on July 2nd of 2018 with the Arizona Diamondbacks. Now, again, he spent time with a whole lot of organizations before finally getting to the D-backs. Now, he went to Arizona in a July 2014 trade that got Joe Thatcher in that deal to the Angels from the D-backs in a deadline move. He moved his way up the Diamondbacks organization and finally in 2018 was able to break through into the big leagues, pitched in two games out of the Arizona bullpen that year. In three innings, it was scoreless for him. He allowed just one hit, and he didn't strike anybody out, and he walked two, but he did have a zero ERA, and he continues to have a zero career ERA in the majors in four innings, allowing just one hit and having two strikeouts and three walks in that time. So Crable will be joining the Orioles later this week. We'll get you more info about Crable from someone who has watched him pitch this year, where he has spent the entire year basically with the AAA Durham Bulls in the Rays system. He's pitched in 44 games out of the Durham bullpen. In 43 innings, he has a 4.19 ERA. He's actually been their closer at times, picked up four saves. But in those 43 innings, it's 38 hits, 20 earned runs allowed, 52 strikeouts to just 9 walks in that time. Also has allowed 8 home runs. The 52 strikeouts to the 9 walks, that's what the Orioles like to see in the 43 innings. He's a fastball slider changeup guy, so it looks like from the minimal data we have, about a 95, 96, maybe 97 mile per hour fastball with an 87 mile per hour slider and a changeup he throws in there as well. And the other thing about Crable, you know, when he got to the major leagues this year, the first batter he faced was Miguel Cabrera and he struck him out. So that's pretty good. And the Orioles will take that, as well as the 28-year-old right-hander Joey Crable will join the Orioles system. To make room for him on the 40-man roster, of course, the Orioles have been dealing with a full 40-man for most of this season. The O's decided to DFA Manny Barreda, of course, the right-handed reliever who the O's signed to a minor league deal this offseason. 32-year-old who the Orioles gave his major league debut this year with the O's, ended up pitching in three games at the big league level for the Orioles, four runs on four hits, two Ks and two walks, and two and two-thirds innings. He had mostly worked in Norfolk this season out of the bullpen, 25 games, 38 and a third innings, had a 3.99 ERA for the Tides. Barreda has been DFA'd. I would assume he probably makes it through waivers and stays in the Tides bullpen for the rest of the AAA season. And speaking of getting through waivers, of course, the Orioles DFA'd Dustin Knight a couple of days ago. He has cleared waivers, so he has been sent right back to AAA Norfolk and will stay in the Orioles organization. But that's the roster moves from Tuesday, and we'll get you more about Joey Crable in the upcoming days. And then there was one more move made by the Orioles on Tuesday, came a little bit later in the day, as the O's recalled Cesar Valdez. The dead fish is back in the major leagues after he had been DFA'd, passed through waivers, and had spent a good amount of time in AAA. He will rejoin the Orioles out of the bullpen. Of course, Valdez with the O's this year had pitched in 38 games out of the bullpen, had a 5.76 ERA in 45 and a third innings. Did have 8 saves when he still was the closer. It was 44 strikeouts, 13 walks, and 8 home runs, 61 hits allowed in those 45 and a third innings. But he did have good success when he went back down to AAA, which is why the Orioles brought him back up. In 9 appearances out of the Tides bullpen, a 1.42 ERA for Cesar Valdez, 12 and two-thirds innings, 10 hits, just 2 earned runs, 12 Ks to 3 walks, and no home runs. So the dead fish was working again against AAA hitters, so why not give Cesar Valdez, the 36-year-old, one more shot here in the majors to end the season? But this really didn't seem like it was a move to get Valdez to the major leagues. It was kind of a move they made because someone had to go on the injured list, and that was DJ Stewart, who is done for the season. The Orioles have placed DJ Stewart on the 60-day IL with right knee osteochondral defect. And not really sure what that is, but Rakabako tweeted this out, that an osteochondral defect refers to a focal area of damage that involves both the cartilage and a piece of underlying bone. So take that as you will. Apparently, Stewart's been getting treatment on the knee for this same thing for months now, and finally just decided to shut it down for the rest of the season. So in terms of the outfield, you know, Stewart really no longer in the rotation. It'll be Mullins, Hayes, and Santander with McKenna kind of filling in for those guys when they need a break at this point. But, you know, we will see. the O's will go with Valdez here. And, you know, they've added guys like Eshelman to the roster the last couple of days and Kriske. They're going with an extra pitcher at this point. So there's a potential in the next day or two they could, you know, send one of those pitchers back down and go with another hitter. So maybe we see Jamai Jones come back. Or maybe one of these outfielders gets his shot. And maybe a guy like Yusnail Diaz would get a chance here at the end of the year with Stewart out. But in terms of DJ Stewart on the season, it definitely ends as a disappointing year for DJ Stewart for the Orioles, as he will not get a chance to put any more, you know, good numbers up to make his season look a little bit better this year, as he ended up playing in 100 games, 318 plate appearances, 204 average, 324 on base, a 698 OPS. The OPS plus was 89. He was basically a below average major league hitter all year. 12 homers, 10 doubles, 33 RBIs. Did draw 44 walks to 89 strikeouts. That batting eye was still good for Stewart this year, but the defense was tough to watch. A lot of strikeouts, not as much homers as you'd like. And now, you know, he goes into his age 28 season next year. As you know, he's been back and forth in the big league since 2018, and the Orioles have, you know, Mullins, Hayes, maybe still Santander. They have some outfielders knocking on the door like Diaz, Nystrom, and Stowers in AAA, and, you know, McKenna's there as well for the Orioles, and now it becomes an interesting time for DJ Stewart going into next year, and it's tough for him to end this season with an injury. I don't know, honestly, at this point, if he'll be an Oriole in 2022, but his 2021 is over. But in terms of the Orioles that are still with the ball club for the rest of the season, did want to get you set for Game 3 of Orioles-Phillies tonight before we go. Final game of the series. Final game for the Orioles against a National League team this season. And maybe, just maybe, if things work out correctly with the CBA negotiations this offseason and we get the Universal DH, this could be your last time ever seeing an Orioles pitcher hit. So if you're into that for some reason, get to the TV tonight. It is the Orioles and the Phillies. Keegan Aiken will take the mound. Keegan Aiken might be the last Orioles pitcher ever to be in a starting lineup as a hitter. Aiken on the season has been kind of up and down, but overall it's his 24th overall game, a 6.93 ERA, and 89 and two-thirds innings of work. Aiken's last start, not great in Boston over the weekend. Four innings, four runs, six hits, no strikeouts, and three walks. Of course, the start before that was the one where he had six no-hit innings against Toronto. So you just never know what you're getting from the left-hander. And against him, it will be Zach Wheeler, the 31-year-old righty for the Phillies, who is a Cy Young contender this year in the National League. He has been just fantastic. Wheeler will make his 31st start of the year. He has a 2.83 ERA, 231 strikeouts in 203rd innings, fully living up to that big contract he got from the Phillies before the 2020 season. Wheeler's last start came against the Mets over the weekend. Five innings, one run, four hits, six Ks, and one walk. He has been devastating this year. It's going to be tough for the Orioles offense to get to him tonight. And then tomorrow, we are right back here with you on the podcast. We will, of course, recap Game 3 between the Orioles and the Phillies, get you the five things you need to know from that one. We'll get you ready for Game 1 between the Orioles and the Rangers, as those two teams start a four-game series at Camden Yards this weekend. Two of the worst teams in baseball matching up at the end of the year. I'm sure no one will be watching besides Orioles and Rangers fans, but we'll get you set for Game 1 of that series. And hopefully, we will get you more info about Joey Crable, the Orioles' newest right-hander, on tomorrow's episode. But until then, I'm Connor Newcomb, and this has been the Locked On Orioles podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.